Okay, so far we have been, let me tell you where we are. I consider a 5D scalar, and then vectors, and then anti-symmetric tensors. So this was phi am, and this is am1 to am p plus 1, and actually I better consider, instead of 5D, any D dimensions. And then we had that these objects had they had a spin 0, this one had spin 0 or 1, and this one had spin 0 or 1. And then the number of degrees of freedom, this we're having 1 plus 1 if you have a complex, and this one had d minus 2, and this one had d minus 2 p plus 1, and you can see that the vector is a particular case of the antisymmetric tensors when p equals to 0. Okay, so we stop there. And the newcomers in the game were these antisymmetric tensors that we were not familiar with in four dimensions, because they were trivially equivalent to scalars in four dimensions. So, but they have a life by themselves in higher dimensions. So, and they are the ones that allow us to consider extended objects in space-time, and these extended objects we call them p-brains. Okay. So, moving on now from still considering bosonic objects of a spin less than 2, the next obvious step is just to go to spin 2, and that will be the graviton. So, today, you have to consider graviton. And this is actually what is called as a Kaluza climb. Kaluza climb just went all the way, starting with gravity in extra dimensions, in five dimensions, and then explore what implications they have. So this is what we will do today. So to start with, I have to consider the following. You consider the graviton, I call it GMN. I will start in five dimensions again for simplicity and then generalize it to extra dimensions. So GMN will have components G mu nu. Again, mu nu going from 0 up to 4. So this is a standard graviton in four dimensions. But then now you can take the components G mu n, where n goes from 4 all the way to d minus 1. This is a graviton. These are vectors. And how many vectors? As many as the n goes, but in this case it's five dimensions, so n is one. And then the other one is G n m in principle, where you can have many. This will be scalars. How many of them is just the number of components of a symmetric tensor in d minus 4 dimensions. In this case, it will be just 1. Okay. So it will be just a G5 5. 3, 5, 5. It's just scalar because it has no indices in space time. Okay, so we have to differentiate between two different metrics, and this is important source of efficiency. So the background metric. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you. The background metric is the one you start from say 5 from the solution of Einstein's equations in 5 dimensions. So you start with the Einstein-Hilbert action in 5 dimensions. Would be the integral of d5x square root of the determinant of the metric times the curvature that I write this sophisticated R just to make it different from a more mundane R that is for radius and this kind of thing. So this is the curvature in 5 dimensions. So I put the 5 here to make it that it's 5 dimensional. And you start with this action. Look for Einstein's equations. And that will tell us that the corresponding 5-dimensional Ricci tensor is 0. And so if that is 0, well, an obvious solution is that the space is flat. So solutions that the GMN is just eta MN, so the space is a 5D Minkowski. That's a flat space, and that's a solution of Einstein's equations in 5 dimensions. But also, you can have a solution of 4D Minkowski times a circle, because the circle is also flat. Remember, the circle is just a straight line and define the points 0 and 2 pi r. So it's also flat. It's also a solution. And for the same matter, we will have, for instance, N3 cross S1 cross S1. That is also a solution, and so on. So we are having a lot of solutions of one single equation. This is a typical thing that happens in physics. We have a very simple general principles and then a richness of realizations. This is a case of that. And people will have taken that as your background, but Kaluza, or especially Klein, took this one as a possible background. Why to choose this one over any of the other ones? There's no reason. You cannot compare one from the other ones. Usually you compare backgrounds by energetic reasons. In this case, you cannot compare them because energy, say in general relativity, is defined by boundary conditions and so on. So they all have different boundary conditions. So you cannot just compare, it's like comparing oranges and bananas, as people say. So this is as good a solution as that one, but also this one. Okay, so there's no reason to pick this one as a solution. So then they say, well, let's explore this one. But that's the only reason. So there's no justification to actually take this as the solution. Okay, so I'm trying to emphasize the positive and negative points. So the positive point is that you assume that the background has to be flat 5 dimensions. There's no reason for that, because you can have all this other possible. But also, if we pick this one, we don't have to pick this one over that one or the other one. Okay, so this is what Kaluza Klein did. So Kaluza Klein, so for M4 crosses 1, so then you choose the metric such that is in general, you can have a function of y, where y is the fifth coordinate, times eta mu nu, dx mu, dx nu, minus dy squared. Of course, you could put off another function of y here, but you can just redefine y to get this y squared. And this eta is a standard Minkowski space, and this is the flat metric in Minkowski space, and this factor tells you that at every point in the extra dimensions, you have the symmetries of Minkowski space, but they can you can still have a function of y. So at each point you can have a different scaling of your physical objects. So this object has a name, and it's called the warp factor. Okay. Also, the y, we're identifying. This could be substituted in some cases by minus r squared dy squared. The difference is that in this term, y goes from 0 to 2 pi r, and in this one, y is just an angular variable, goes from 0 to 2 pi. Okay, so you can put the r explicitly in the metric, and that tells you, this tells you how large your circle is explicitly on the metric. Or you can hide the size of the circle in your coordinates. So both are used in the literature. Okay, so this is the background metric that we're assuming. Then there is another metric from that. Then is the ansatz for the metric that for the like we did for the scalar fields and the vectors and so on that we span in a Fourier expansion. We can do the same thing for each component of the metric, and that. So the general metric, or the excitations of the metric, can be written as follows. I will write G and N to be in this nasty fashion. I will just write minus phi to the minus 1/3, and I will tell you why. Then it comes a big matrix here. So I will have the 4 by 4 part g mu nu minus this constant k square phi a nu. Then I will have here a minus k phi a mu minus k phi a mu, and then I'll have phi. There's nothing strange about this. This is just the components of the metric g mu nu. This is the g mu phi. This is g phi. Oh, sorry, g mu 4. Sorry. That's a, G 4 4 and of course G 4 mu. Okay, so this is a 4 by 4 block, a 1 by 1 block, and these columns. Okay, this factor, this overall factor here is written just by convenience, and I will tell you the reason why. It's nothing very deep, but it's for convenience to get things to work in a nicer way at the end. So this, you can see that the excitations of the metric have the four-dimensional metric, a vector, that I'm calling it a mu, and a scalar, as I told you over there. The metric, the vector, and the scalar. Okay. K is just a dimension full constant to make a mu have dimensions of 1. Usually the metric, the vectors have dimension 1, but the metric has no dimensions. So then you put kappa with dimension minus 1 to compensate. So kappa will be related to the fundamental scale in your theory that I have to write here. And this is very important. This I call m star cube. And the reason is usually in four dimensions is m Planck square. And here, for dimensional reasons, the power has to be cube. And this is not M Planck, but it's what I call M star, is the scale, the fundamental scale in your five-dimensional theory. It will be the equivalent of M Planck in five dimensions, but it is not the physical M Planck in four dimensions. Okay. So this, in general, now these functions, G mu, nu, A mu, and so on, they are functions in general of X and Y. Okay? They're functions of all the X's and the Y's. But if I choose them, if I make a Fourier expansion, and I will do it explicitly just so that, then you will have Gmn to be phi 0 to the 1/3, g mu nu 0 plus k phi 0. A mu 0, A nu 0, phi 0, A nu 0, minus G mu 0, and phi 0.
Should that be minus outside?
Here?
No, outside. Phi 0. You had phi to the minus of term before.
Oh, sorry. Yes, thank you. And so the metric will be this plus the infinite tower of massive modes. For each of the fields, as we have seen already. And this is the Kaluza-Klein mode, the Kaluza-Klein tower.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yes. Okay. So, and this metric is what people usually call the Kaluza-Klein ansatz. It's just the zero mode part. This is usually called KK ansatz, especially because for Kaluza, he was neglecting all the infinite powers of massive states, so he only considered the massless states. Okay. So, now doing this, we can do the same thing as we have done for scalars and vectors. What is it that we do? Take that and plug back into the five-dimensional action. So, and what is it that you get? You get S in four dimensions equals to the integral of the square root of modulus of the determinant of the G times M Planck square. This is M Planck and not M star. Times the curvature in four dimensions now. But then you get also minus, and then there are factors of phi 0 over 4, f mu nu, and of course they are all zeros. And then you have a term which is plus 1/6, d mu phi 0, d mu phi 0 divided by phi 0 square.
And here we
remove S4. S 4 dimensions, yes? Yes. So all this is integrated. Probably it's better to put a d4x beginning. d4x stands there. So we have already integrated the fifth dimension. And of course, then we get the extra terms, which will come from the heavy Kaluza-Klein modes. Okay. So what is it that we have learned from here? We have learned a lot. Because we have started from just the simplest theory in five dimensions, just pure Einstein in five dimensions, no matter, we ended up with precisely a theory in four dimensions that includes Einstein theory in four dimensions, the Einstein action in four dimensions, but it has also the Maxwell action in four dimensions, F mu, F mu, and it has also a scalar, massless scalar in four dimensions. So this is what people would have called a unified theory of all interactions as for 1920, because in 1920, electromagnetism was the only interaction besides gravity that was known. So this is actually a unified theory of gravity and, say, Maxwell. And on top of that, scalar that we didn't ask for, because nobody wanted a scalar. They only wanted to get electromagnetism, but the scalar has to be there. It was originally neglected by Kaluza and Klein. It was actually only introduced 20 years later by Jordan. And it is interesting that in 20 years, people didn't realize, because the scalar, if you set it to 1, is inconsistent. The field equations are not satisfied. So you have to include the scalar. That's interesting to see how historically people didn't appreciate that. Okay, so that's the first comment. So you have a unified theory. From starting with Einstein in five dimensions, you get everything you wanted, at least in 1920, four dimensions. Second, symmetries. From your five-dimensional theory, once you see it in four-dimensional, you have one is general coordinate transformations in four dimensions. So that means that you have x mu goes to x prime mu of as a function of the x nu coordinates. And that tells you that well, in particular, that's why you have the metric as your for g mu nu zero, the zero model of the metric is the graviton, and of course a mu transforms as a vector under that. So that's nothing surprising there, and a mu should be zero also. And essentially, this is justifies why the graviton is massless, because there's the symmetry behind. But there are also symmetries involving the fifth dimension. In the fifth dimension, you have y goes to y prime, and y prime in general could be a function of the x mu's and y. So you're just making a general transformation. However, notice that the metric, the size element, the ds square for this metric, notice that ds square for this metric, it becomes, well, 5 to the minus a third, that is always on top of that. And then you will have eta mu nu dx mu dx nu. And the rest, all the terms, this one and that one, combine themselves into phi times dy minus k a mu dx mu square. So you can see that that was the convenient way to write this term together with that. And we didn't write just a g mu here, we just split it into these two, in such that then you have the standard. I'm sorry, this will be the G-menu. Sorry. This will be the G-menu. You have the G-menu in four dimensions, and then the rest just comes together with the A mu in a nice factorizable way. So then if you do this transformation for y goes to y prime equals to the function of x mu and y, and you want to leave the metric invariant. And you want to leave the metric invariant, you want to have that the when you have dy prime here, it will come with a factor 1 here, not a function of x. So that means, so to have ds squared invariant, we need two things. One is to have f of x mu on y to be just y plus a function of the x mu, because then you will have dy prime will be dy plus something else. So it will give you this first term there. But the other thing is that you have to have these two transformations, these two objects killing each other, that to leaves you something invariant. So that means that you have dy prime will be equal then to dy plus, this will be partial f with respect to x dx mu. And so you will have this extra term in your transformation here. So how can you compensate it? You can compensate it by a transformation of A mu. So this implies that A mu prime equals to A mu. What is it? It's plus 1 over kappa df. Okay, so that means that if I make this transformation, this precisely kills that, and you will get this element invariant. Is that clear? Yes, good. But what is this? This is just a standard gauge transformation. So you can see that four dimensions gauge transformation comes out naturally from the symmetry in the fifth dimension. Okay, so that is, I think, it's very beautiful, and that shows how at the end you get electromagnetism out of the fifth dimension, because this, you get the gauge invariance. Okay. Question. G minu is the graviton. Yes. G minu is the graviton in 4D. Yes.
Are you assuming that G minu is a small gravitation due factor? Or we actually use this ds squared as w of y eta anywhere, or is that just?
Oh, very good. Thank you very much. Yes. So far, and for the rest of the next 20 minutes, I will assume there's no warp factor. Okay. That's it. This, yes, so G will be, no, because G will be the. I got another good question. Remember that I say this is the background metric, and this is the excitations of the metric. So this is the field itself. Okay, so it's a different thing. So the background, you just say, what is the expectation value? So you say the expectation value of this in my M4 crosses 1 is that the expectation value of the zero mode of the metric is eta. Okay, but this will be the perturbation, the excitations of the mode. So this is the field itself. Yeah. So that's the difference between Kaluza-Klein ansatz and the background. So please take that and understand this difference, because it's a source of many confusions. So this is the excitations of the metric in the same way that we took every other field, the scalar and the amus, to expand in a Fourier series. And this is just the zero mode of that expansion. And and this is the background, the metric that we wrote for the background, to say that the background is M4 crosses 1, so you have eta mu nu and S1. And for the moment, as Kaluza did and Klein did and many other people did, they don't consider the warp factor. This warp factor I will introduce it later on when it plays an important role. So at the moment, these are solutions with where the work factor is essentially one. Okay. Thank you for the question. Okay. And of course, gauge invariance implies that you can have, that's why A mu or A mu zero to be consistent is a gauge field. Of course, a massless object, gauge field. Okay. That was symmetry 2 and then symmetry 3. There's an extra symmetry, which is a you take y goes to y, then a mu goes to lambda a mu, and phi goes to lambda to the minus 2 phi. If you can see from here, or from the it's probably easier to see it from here, you can see you scale y and a mu by the same amount, this is squared, and then scale phi 0 by the opposite amount, then this is invariant, and then the whole metric will be fully scaled by an overall factor. To the factor which is lambda to the 2/3 times the square. So this is just overall scaling. Okay. Of the metric. Notice that if I will have written the phi to the minus a third in front of everything, it will be just a symmetry. This gives us an indication for two things. Is that why is it that I chose this phi to the minus of 1/3 in front of everything? It's because if I wouldn't have chosen, my end result would not have been just n Planck square times the first term will not be just the Einstein term in four dimensions, but I would have gotten a power of phi in front. Okay, so by choosing this, it's like making what is called rescaling of the whole metric, such that it gives me the coefficient of the curvature to be a constant, and this is the reason this was introduced. So it's just we're playing with vile rescalings of the whole metric. Okay, that's one point. The other one is that this indicates that a phi zero is not only massless, but also we can change it by any amount, and nothing changes. But we can just scale it, and so it is what I discussed. I told you at some point in the previous lecture, it is a modulus. So that means it's a flat direction. This is very important. Why is this very important? First of all, you can see it's a flat direction because the field has a kinetic term, but has no potential term. So there's no potential for the field phi. So that means that the potential is just flat, it's just zero for phi. So you can take any value. The value of phi is completely arbitrary. It's completely arbitrary. And since it is arbitrary, what is it that we can say? So the value of phi is arbitrary. But this is, notice what is phi. Phi is my 4-4 component of the metric. So it is related to the size of the fifth dimension. Okay. And this size of the fifth dimension, there is nothing in the theory that tells you what is it. It can be very large, it can be very small. Actually, if it is, it can be infinity, it can be all the way to infinity, and then we will recover the five-dimensional Minkowski space. Okay. So, but then for any other finite value, it will be a circle, but it will be a very large circle. Okay. And this is well, it's something to keep in mind. And yes. Yes. Very good. It's a good point. So the electromagnetic coupling, that means when you set phi to infinity, you are decoupling the electromagnetic field. Yeah, exactly. And then you recover the whole five-dimensional theory without electromagnetism. Because remember that the coupling F mu is 1 over g squared. So phi to infinity is g to 0. So that means that there is no electromagnetism. Yes. Very good. And finally, for a question of scales, names, phi is usually called the breathing mode. Just to say how large the extra dimension is. Or it's also usually called the radian. And it's usually called the dilaton. However, for people who have seen string theory, it's not necessarily the string theory dilaton. Okay. It happens to be the string theory dilaton and you go from 11 to 10 dimensions. But otherwise, it's not. Okay, so the other comment is that, as I told you, the factor of phi to the minus a third was to get the M Planck square, but I haven't defined you what the M Planck square is. M Planck, when you get it, is equal to the fundamental scale to the cubic power times 2 pi r. Okay. So this is fundamental, this is derived. So M Planck. It's a derived quantity. It's not a fundamental. But M Planck is what we know. But we know that M Planck is an object that in 4 dimensions we know is 10 to the 19 GeV. But we don't know what is the value of M star, not what is the value of R. So at the end, the only thing that this is telling us is a constraint between M star and R, that this product has to give you 10 to the 19 GeV, which is this is the only thing that we know in nature is there. Yes?
I might be wrong, but what would be an R? Would it not affect the phi zero? Choosing an R?
Oh, no, that's precisely the point of phi zero. That's a good question. If I wouldn't have chosen the phi zero here, there would have been a phi zero multiplying the R, and that would be my definition of M Planck. But the reason I chose this is that there are this cancels, but you rescale the metric such that you kill the factor of phi zero. Yeah, that's a good point. And by doing this, the metric that we work with, this G mu nu zero, is what is called the Einstein metric, because this is the Einstein frame in the sense that the coefficient of root GR is just a constant. Very good. So, in general, well, let me see. I better say this later. Okay. So keep this in mind. This is the fundamental quantity. The fundamental scale in your theory is not known. The only thing that is 10 to the 19 GeV is M Planck. It's a typical mistake people make in string theory. Typical mistake. This will be the scale of string theory. And people say, oh, what is the scale of string theory? It's a Planck scale. That's wrong. So the Planck scale is a physical thing. The scale of string theory will be something that related to R gives you that. Many important people make this same mistake, so you wouldn't be surprised. Okay, so the other thing is that this can be generalized to extra dimensions. I better write it here. And the answer that you write is that now GMN first of all, well, I won't write the overall factor here because it will be more complicated in that case. So this will not give me Einstein, but written like that. I will tell you later what H is. And I will tell you what this capital K is. This is little k, and this is capital K. Minus sign also. Okay. So now this will be again the 4x4 part. This will be a 4 times n part where n is the extra dimensions. This is the n by n. And this is the cross to that one. Okay. So let me just define what each of these quantities are. I told you that that there will be several vectors, so they will be labeled mu and I and mu j because you have more dimensions. The thing that I have to define for you is this capital K, KIM, they happen to be, for both those of you who know about this, scaling vectors of internal manifolds. That I'm calling this internal manifold MD minus 4. That's the one that's substituting the circle S1. Killing vectors, these are the things that generate the symmetries, the isometries of the manifold. Well, HIJ is just a composed quantity in terms of killing vectors. And MN is metric. Of this compact internal space, D minus 4. And you can see, so the gamma MN, now you have many of them because they are labeled, just any combination, a symmetric combination of M and N. And this will generalize the number of phis that you have. There are many phis now. And each of them will be a flat direction, so there will be many moduli.
So the
MN, yes. Yes, MN goes from where? Goes from phi all the way to D minus 1. These are the indices of the internal dimensions. Okay. So, and this was the generalization that I mentioned to you for instance, DeWitt and then other people did in the 60s, is that this generalized to more dimensions. You have more symmetries, so that means you can have, if this space is a coset space, you can have the symmetries of that coset. You can ask for a Young-Mills theory. So at the end, what is it that this gives you on top of what we know? If you start from 5 dimensions, you get Maxwell. If you start from this, you get Young-Mills. This unfortunately, I will not prove this for you because that requires some GR background that you don't have to have, that and I'm not requiring it. So just for general knowledge, this is the thing that I'm only telling you that. And important, in this case, the n Planck square at the end of the day will be equal to the fundamental scale to the power d minus 2 times the volume of the manifold D manifold, essentially. And this will be given roughly by this. There will be some overall factors, but it's essentially that. And usually, so then you can you write a, so that means that M Planck square will be star to the D minus 2 times the volume to the, it will be as from the a length scale to the power D minus 4. So you can write this like equal to M star square times M star times R to the power D minus 4. So you can see that the Planck scale and the fundamental scale will be equal if the radius is of order 1 over M star. Okay. Otherwise, if the radius is very large, this scale can be very small compared to M Planck. How small can it be? We have to see. The only requirement that we have so far is that M star has to be bigger than 1 TeV, because that's the scale that we have been able to explore so far. But also, R has to be smaller than to the minus 16 centimeters, because of the same reason. This is the same scale, because we haven't seen the Kaluza-Klein modes. Otherwise, because remember, the Kaluza-Klein modes will have mass 1 over R, and that will be, if the scale is 1 TeV, then they will be getting particles as light as hundreds of GeVs or TeV. So this is the requirement that we have. And so usually, people used to take M star close to M Planck. The other, and this will be changed and from what I will say next, the other detail that I want to emphasize is that this was very beautiful, and I may kill the feeling of fun this here, is that this was very, very beautiful, because starting from just pure gravity, you get all interactions. So that was the idea of Kaluza-Klein and people working on that before, after that. However, you may have that the extra dimensions may not have isometries, for instance. A typical case in string theory, but it's called Calabi-Yau spaces, they don't have isometries. So then you don't have these gauge fields. You don't have Killing vectors, because there are no isometries, so you don't have these gauge fields. And so where do the gauge fields come from? And so at the end, you have to... What is now appreciated is that this is a nice way of getting gauge fields, but it's not the only one, and there are other ways to get them. And we will discuss that next time. So, probably this is a good moment to stop. I would have loved to take 10 more minutes of your time, but I will do it next time. Okay.